Hi, you're listening to iiPod, the official podcast of the Duke Lemur Center in Durham, North Carolina.
I'm Matt Bortz, curator of fossils at the Duke Lemur Center.
And I'm Megan McGrath, education programs manager at the Duke Lemur Center.
Hi, Megan.
Hi, Matt.
So we've talked about eyes. We've talked about the ring-tailed lemurs. We've talked about Shafak, cockerel Shafak, and somewhat about their other Shafak relatives. What are we talking about this season?
Well, this season, we are moving on to maybe one of the most beautiful groups of lemurs, just the most striking creatures. This season of iiPod, we are talking about the ruffed lemurs.
Or
Varicia. In Latin, it literally means different colors. It comes from the same root for like variety, which are named for their beautiful beards.
We're talking about black and white ruffed lemurs, or Varicia variegata, or Varicanda in Malagasy, and red ruffed lemurs, or Varicia rubra, or in Malagasy, our Varimena, two currently recognized species in the Varicia genus. People who are in the season are going to probably lump the species together a lot, so can we talk a little bit more about that? How we explore whether or not they're different species? Are these the only two species we're ever going to recognize in this genus of Varicia? Who else are they related to?
In like the big picture, we can take genetic samples from ruffed lemurs. And these animals fit within the group of lemurs called the Lemuridae. That day means a family. So the family of lemur. And the animal that gives its name to the Lemuridae is Lemurcata. So that's the ring-tailed lemur. So this is an animal, Varicia, fits within the group that includes Lemurcata. Varicia are part of like a little branch of the family tree that's missing a member. There's one extinct group that was a close relative of Varicia, which is an animal called Pachylemur. It's a recently extinct species. Its name, Pachy, means like tough or like big. And so it literally just means like big lemur, because they were. They were like 1.5 times the size of ruffed lemurs, which themselves are really big. They're the biggest lemurs within the family Lemuridae. And so Pachylemur was the biggest of the lemurids. And so Pachylemur is found kind of in the fossil record all over Madagascar. It's clear that being built like a ruffed lemur can get you pretty far in life.
Ruffed lemurs are quadrupedal, like the other members of the Lemuridae family. The ruffed lemurs are moving on all fours, and they basically live in a part of Madagascar where these giant trees have huge overlapping kind of canopies of branches. And so it's kind of like a highway of branches. In the wild, they're spending most of their time like up in that region of the trees. And so they don't really need to have a solid plan for where they're going. There's always going to be a branch or something to catch themselves, and they can grab with their hands or their feet as they move along. Help that the tail can help them balance. And so here, watching them move, you'll watch a cockerel Shafak in the forest here, and you'll see very subtly, but you'll see them kind of like glance at where they're going and almost map out a route and like, okay, I'll jump to this tree, then this tree, then this tree. There is absolutely no planning with the ruffed lemurs. The ruffed lemurs are just like, I'll figure it out. And they just go across the treetops. I think that sums up their personalities too. Like, they're pretty confident animals as a general rule as a species. And they're like, I'll figure it out as I go. Things will move out of my way. But their personalities can be a little bit tricky to work with, a little bit bold and boisterous, if you will.
The other fun locomotor behavior they have is they are really good at hanging upside down. And this feeds into the, pun intended, the kind of food they eat, because they need to get out to the small branches where fruit and leaves that are really young and where flowers are. And so those structures on plants tend to be pretty small branches. Like, if you kind of look at a tree, like the small little things at the end are really where the good stuff is. And so getting out to the good stuff, you can't like walk on top of a branch and expect to make it all the way to the end of the fruit. And so they have this behavior where they can flip upside down and walk underneath the branch as it gets thinner and thinner, which basically makes them look like really fluffy, long-tailed sloths at a certain point. And sometimes it just looks like they're showing off, but there's kind of like, I'm upside down now. And there's no reason. Like, I'm just like happier looking at you upside down than I am right side up. So just deal with it. And then I'll flip over eventually. I hadn't appreciated how much time they spend upside down before I came to the Lemur Center and just like look in the forest. It's like, I'm comfy. I'm just hanging, literally hanging out.
That's actually something they share in common, oddly enough, with the Shafak. Because we think of Shafak as these upright animals who move through the forest. And when they're moving from tree to tree, that's true. But one similarity they share is, just like the ruffed lemurs, the Shafak are adapted to get out to these ends of branches and get the newest growth of leaves or flowers or possibly even early wild fruiting buds. And so it is interesting to think about that one overlap they share, where this animal will suddenly just flip upside down and hang from 1 foot precariously while reaching for the tiniest little bit of a branch. Let's talk about what rough lemurs eat. What's their primary diet?
So the kind of short answer is frugivore. And so a frugivore, frug means fruit in Latin. We could just say like fruit eater and it'd mean the same thing. The rough lemurs are like the fruit lovers of lemurs. Like every primate loves fruit. I love fruit. My toddler loves fruit. The berry budget we have in our grocery bill is wild. And so all the animals at the Lemur Center love kind of fruit salad. But especially in the wild, like Barisi are very committed to eating fruit where they can find it. The great thing about fruit is it is a lot of nutrition packed in a small space. The problem with fruit is it only shows up at certain times of the year in certain places and certain trees that are ready for it. It's really patchy in the way that it spreads itself through the forest. And so the fact that they are fruit eaters and love going after fruit means that they also have a very special way of needing to navigate the forest that's different than some other types of lemurs that like leaves. There's a pickiness that Shafak have, like they don't eat every leaf that they encounter. They are more abundant. If you find a tree that is leafing, there's a lot more leaves than there are fruit. And so that specialization is really interesting. And some rough lemurs, 70-80% of their diet will just be fruit for certain parts of the year. But they also are capable of eating other kinds of food, especially females that are either pregnant or producing milk for their young will seek out a more protein-rich sources of food. And so they'll go after young leaves, they'll go after flowers, they'll go after nectar if that's available in the flowering plants that are nearby. And so they do have this slightly omnivorous way of going about food, but it's like given a choice, like fruit is the way you go if you are a rough lemur.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's always important. I think we've talked about this on previous seasons to discuss like fruit and how we define fruit in the wild versus here is a little different, right? Like the berries, and to some extent, I think as like Americans, we have a bit of a skewed perception of this, right? Because like blueberries taste like blueberries if you find them in the wild, and blackberries taste like blackberries. But let's take the example of like a banana. What we know as a banana is not what bananas originally looked like. You can look it up, folks. It's mostly like seed and fiber and a tiny bit of sugar. And so think more on the realm of that for wild fruits, right? So when we say that rough lemurs love fruit, given the choice, I think they would put themselves into a sugar coma and eat all of the craisins and raisins and banana they could. But here we do have to be cognizant of the fact that wild fruit is more like, say, a cucumber, which is a fruiting body, but we consider it a vegetable in our diet, or say a tomato. And so when we look at feeding them here, we do have to cut back on some of those favorites. Although I will say that they go for grapes, bananas first in their diet. And if we know we need to ask them to do something hard or scary for training or something we need them to do really reliably, the highest value reward you can offer is going to be like a dried fruit, a fig, a craisin, something like that. So it's good to know how to bribe the animals that we're caring for here best.
I hadn't actually seen rough lemurs in person before I saw them here at the Lemur Center. And back to what I was saying at the top, these are really just beautiful animals. They're also really unusual for primates because they have a lot going on below their chins and not a whole lot going on up top. Like this ruff, or really it's a beard, is why I mentally nicknamed them the Darwin lemurs. Darwin had a really impressive beard and not a whole lot on top of his head. But this beard or ruff of a rough lemur isn't just for show. It's been co-opted by plants to help rough lemurs play a really unusual role for a primate in the rainforest.
It is pretty funny to hear accounts of black and white ruffed lemurs shoving their face in a giant traveler's palm flower and coming up with a beard full of yellow pollen and moving on to the next. So they're definitely very prone to sugary snacks and drinks. How much of primate evolution in general is possibly driven by fruiting, flowering trees, by angiosperms? And there's whole hypotheses around this, right? About different traits being really necessary because the best bit of fruit is at the very end of that branch and your body might be too big to get to it. So how do we figure out how to get that tasty fruit at the end of that thin branch?
Yeah, it's basically the question of like, why aren't squirrels primates? Primates and squirrels have a lot of overlap and they spend a lot of time in trees, but there's all these traits that squirrels are missing. And the most important one is thumbs. Squirrels actually can't like hold on to something with their thumb in quite the same way that we can. And it's like, why did that happen in primates? And so one hypothesis, there's actually partially developed by a Duke researcher named Doug Boyer, who is here in the evolution anthropology department. A really important part of early primate evolution was specializing on getting to the very tips of branches where having claws is kind of useless. Like you can't grappling hook onto like a tiny new slippery branch that has that nice little bud at the very end of it or a nice little piece of fruit. Instead, being able to wrap your hand around it and kind of clamber out there becomes possibly a way that early, early primates were able to get these really nutritious little packages of calories from the very ends of trees in a way that a squirrel, you can watch a squirrel and they're pretty good at figuring out how to get there, but they still get a little clumsy up there in a way that primates can very expertly grab and then get back to the safety of a thicker branch. And another important part about rough lemurs being fruit eaters in the wild is that there's the important relationship is pollinators for getting fruit started in the first place. But the other important role that fruit eaters have in forests all over the world is fruit tends to put a lot of its nutrition right around seeds. And so the seeds get eaten by animals along with the fruit. That seed often gets passed through the gut practically intact. Like a seed is built to resist being broken down quickly. And then if that seed is lucky enough to make its way through the gut of a lemur and come out the other side, it's deposited with a whole bunch of nutrition surrounding it in whatever fecal deposit is going on. And that actually becomes a really important way that rough lemurs help build the forest around them. And they're kind of known as being one of the many kind of seed dispersal agents. They help build basically their own buffet as they go through the forest. They eat the food they like, and then they poop it out and make more forest as they go. And that has really important implications for the conservation of these animals, because as they become restricted, they're not moving through the forest. They're not propagating the forest around them. There's ongoing research about the impact of things like the giant extinct lemurs like pachylemur, which was this giant varicia that was probably eating bigger seeds of bigger fruits and depositing those around. The forest itself has been changed by the absence of animals that are able to move these seeds around the landscape. And so that's also an important role that rough lemurs have in their forests is as fruit eaters, they're also fruit poopers. And that is an important part for all the other animals in the forest that use those trees as well.
Love that we have terms like seed dispersal for these really important ecological roles and niches. And it's just a fancy way of saying they eat and poop and it's good.
Yeah.
Like that's basically their whole job is eating, and in my opinion, eating fruit, digesting it kind of badly. So the seeds are fully intact when it comes through a few hours later, and then poop, it's out in a pile of fertilizer. And it's a pretty easy job, but an important job. So I'm glad they're out there doing it.
So they help to pollinate the forest, and they have these beautiful coats.
So those coats are really kind of plush and lush, which is not something you'd necessarily expect from an animal that's living in rainforest habitat. But what I always tell people is we don't just wear coats when it's cold outside. We also wear coats when it's wet outside. And so if you think of that adaptation as a built-in coat, it's not a fur coat for the snow. It's a fur coat for the rain because rainforests can be pretty warm and humid. But as temperatures drop when the sun goes down, if you're sopping wet when you're going to sleep in the dark, you might get kind of chilly. And so kind of like a built-in raincoat or like the fur equivalent of water rolling off a duck's back. Interestingly, when we're caring for the lemurs here at the Lemur Center, even though we're very careful with their temperature requirements during the winter, the rough lemurs tend to be a little more boisterous and active a little earlier in the temperature changes. They love fall. They get pretty droopy when it gets really hot outside. You'll see them melt over the surfaces of things to nap if it's too hot out. So you can see that their coat definitely does affect their perception of how warm it is or what they think about the cold weather as well. I also think that amongst all the lemurs, rough lemurs have one of the most prominent snoots, to use the technical term. That Strepsirrhine rhinarium long nose, I think, is particularly prominent on these guys. Their nose is really, really dog-like, that the narrow, long snout that really shows off the fact that this is not the primate you think of when you think of a primate, right?
On the end of that snout, having this little fang hanging out is kind of a distinctive little part of being a rough lemur. When I have shown students or visitors to the museum, like the skull of a rough lemur, they think it's a dog or a carnivore of some kind. And it's interesting that even in the living animals, you can see the little fang sticking out. And fangs do not, in fact, correlate very much with being a meat eater. Fangs have more to do with social communication, like kind of being able to show off your teeth is something that when you can't be very articulate, showing your teeth communicates a lot very quickly. And that fang kind of speaks more to their complicated social lives.
Whenever you have larger family groups, let's say mom has two generations of kids living with her and dad, that means you could have 8 rough lemurs in the same troop if you have triplets each year and they're all doing well and thriving. And so the larger the group gets and the older everyone gets, the more you're going to see this fission, fusion kind of social structure. And this is something you'll see a lot in social animal structure. The bigger the group gets, the easier it is for things to break apart. I think this is a really relatable thing too. Like think back to times in your life where the bigger the group you've been in has gotten, the more the structure is broken down. Think of like when multiple classes got combined for an assembly at school and it was really hard to keep everyone in line versus breaking out into smaller groups and everyone's really focused and doing well. And in rough lemurs, it's not even a case of like, oh, we have a fission, everyone's split up. It might be, oh, for a little while during this season, we kind of break apart or even during this part of the day. And then during another part of the day, we might come together. And that can also depend on other factors too.
When there are a lot of resources around, like a bunch of rough lemurs can gather in the same tree, all eating the same food, or if there's a sense of threat or risk, if we need more eyes on the trees, we need more eyes on the ground, there might be a sense of kind of coming together, like that there is this flexibility in the way that they can relate to each other. They're not so strictly territorial that we can only have 5 of us together and everyone else is the enemy. Like we'd be like, okay, but that's our cousin, that's our neighbor, that's our friend.
And one of the ways rough lemurs keep that fairly large troop together is through their vocalizations.
Everyone knows rough lemurs as the noisy ones, the loud ones. The neighbors of the Duke Lemur Center know the ruffed lemurs within like about a half mile of the lemur center. Here, we see them do what are called alarm calls, which is their loudest vocalization all the time.
It's crazy how loud that is. It's not even close to how much that call can resonate when you're actually in the forest. To look at a rough lemur and like to watch it make the noises doesn't make a lot of sense. Like they look like little cat dog monkeys. A howler monkey is the loudest primate. A howler monkey has this posture and this like giant like face and throat. And like it makes sense that that animal is like be able to blast with like that huge head that they're able to use. But I don't know, like rough lemurs don't look all that different from like a ringtailed lemur.
And I feel like rough lemurs may not be as well known as the ringtailed lemurs, but they're still really easily recognizable as lemurs. But their social structure is, it's a bit weird.
The it takes a village kind of communal strategy is very much present in rough lemurs and works for them. Rough lemurs tend to have slightly larger troops than your average diurnal lemur or lemur who's active during the day. They are polygamous for the most part. You're not going to see like a strict monogamous pair that stays together year after year. Rough lemurs are physiologically different than their diurnal relatives, to the point that like the females have different numbers of mammary glands available. So we've got a lemur that has evolved in a very unprimate-like way to have a litter of infants at a time. They can technically have up to 6 infants. The mom has 6 mammary glands available for the infants, but mammals follow the rule of halves, so she typically has 2 or 3 infants at a time. Because she's having 2 or 3, she can't possibly carry 3 infants around with her while she's walking around and leaping around the canopy layer. She's going to build nests. Actually, the only species in the Strepsirrhine group, so that's in the lemur loris potto family, that actually builds nests exclusively for child rearing. And she's going to probably build multiple nests, and she's going to kind of move them between the nests, more like what you imagine a cat doing, kind of like picking them up gently with her mouth and moving them around. And so what's fascinating about rough lemurs is they're kind of like the opposites of the Shafak that we talked about in the last season when it comes to everything about their child rearing. So rough lemurs have actually a really short gestational period. Their gestational period is just over 100 days, which is wild for developing multiple fetuses into like a baby. And you'd think the babies would be more independent if they're being left in nests, but no, they have such a short gestation time that they're pretty wobbly for the first couple of weeks and not very stable and not able to do much on their own, but they are pretty feisty. And unlike an aye-aye who say leaves their baby in a nest, but it's at night when the baby is hidden in the nest, rough lemurs are leaving babies in the nest during the day when it's broad daylight. Something could find that baby.
Now it's like this new problem of like, okay, they're so undeveloped, so to speak. Like their hands aren't built for grabbing fur yet. They have fingers and toes and everything. But like one of the things that's amazing about a lot of primates is grip happens super early. Rough lemurs have given up on that because there is this additional strategy that they use where it's like, okay, I can't carry these around, but I can build a nest. These animals can stay there. And basically, like, they're like lemur birds for a second there, where they're like up in a tree. And birds, when they're born, are also pretty useless. And so mom has to provision them. So it kind of becomes this very similar strategy that rough lemurs are using. So that leads to sociality. Like, if you're going to park your underdeveloped infant and you need to feed it because it can't quite run around with you yet and also just can't grab onto you yet, it means that teaming up with other moms that are dealing with a similar situation or other members of your troop who might know how to deal with the infants becomes really important. They end up having kind of multiple parents that are helping to raise them.
Allo parenting. So allo is basically the scientific term for kind of communal or family activities. So allo grooming is grooming each other in the troop, or allo parenting is other family members, older siblings, aunts, even potentially uncles, kind of babysitting or watching the nest.
Rough lemurs, born little puny little creatures that need to grow up really quick. The way that rough lemurs are able to pull that off is their milk is crazy nutritious and dense with calories. It takes a lot of effort for mom to get enough calories herself to then make that super nutritious milk. And so if there are multiple females that are able to produce milk that are in the community, they'll actually nurse other infants that need it in a way that is really fascinating and relatively rare among primates. And I think it's especially interesting as humans looking at this, because that strategy is what we do. Like, it actually doesn't seem that weird. We have infants that are really useless when they're born. Like, they can't even hold their heads. And then we park them and we use our friends and relatives to help raise them, because it takes a lot of work to kind of get a human independent enough to go and collect their own food. Madagascar is this long, skinny island that is really kind of the shape of California for American listeners that might be able to picture that. And so along this long east coast is where the rainforests of Madagascar are. And those rainforests are created by these mountains that have built up along the east coast. Weather coming off the Indian Ocean slams into those mountains and basically drops all of its water on the east side of Madagascar. And it creates these rainforests because there's a lot of rain coming off of the Indian Ocean. And one of the things that's interesting about the eastern rainforest of Madagascar is it has been relatively resilient to extinction so far. When we go into the fossil record of Madagascar, like the recent extinctions, you look in caves in the west and there are tons of species that are not found in that area anymore. You look in the east has this really high biodiversity. So it really feels like the eastern rainforest has survived a lot of the impacts that have affected the rest of the island up to this point. And then now it is really degrading quickly. And so it's also not a ecosystem that is needed to be resilient. It doesn't have as many fail safes built into it in a way that is really distressing for people that study these ecosystems. Like, there's not a lot of backups, so to speak.
So definitely want to come back to the fragility of this habitat. But first, let's talk more about why the rough lemurs call the rainforest on the east coast of Madagascar home.
The red rough lemurs are found on the Mashwala Peninsula, which is like the northeastern part of this rainforest. And then the black and white rough lemurs are found all along the rest of like the eastern rainforest. And that rainforest is not kind of a continuous rainforest. It's being broken up. There's rivers that are crossing through it. There's human impacts that are affecting it. One of the things that's kind of interesting about these rainforests is they're called the evergreen forests. They're evergreen because you're getting so much warm weather coming off of the Indian Ocean. The leaves are on the trees all the time. Like, rainforests are evergreen forests. And that is beautiful habitat for animals that want to eat a lot of fruit, which is exactly what a rough lemur is. If you live in the tropical rainforest, plants are kind of constantly producing fruit throughout the year. Just different plants are in different cycles. And so the animals kind of map their ranging patterns on, okay, like, this tree is producing fruit now, it's not producing anymore. This other species of plant is starting to produce fruit over here. And so they're moving from different kinds of fruit trees to fruit trees. And so that leads to this ranging pattern rough lemurs have. They kind of like roam their landscape looking for like, what's on the menu this week?
Rough lemurs are susceptible to any changes with the trees. Let's say you have a specific blight or something that comes through. If it wipes out a certain tree species or other options or changes the fruiting patterns of those trees, like climate change is doing for everything everywhere, rough lemurs are really sensitive to those kinds of changes.
So this habitat, which does not have backups, is in trouble. Let's talk a little bit now about what that means for rough lemurs.
These guys are critically endangered. not just in the general sense, but in a defined sense by the International Union for the Conservation of Nature, or the IUCN Red List. Both ruffed lemur species that are recognized are critically endangered. And a big part of this is that kind of specific evolution, right? The specificity of being frugivorous, of needing these really humid rainforest habitats to survive and thrive. And also, ruffed lemurs are not the only animals that recognize how great a rainforest is for habitat and for resources. So that comes to invasive species. They're going to thrive really well in rainforest areas. And that also comes to kind of human activity on the island. I didn't appreciate until I got into the conservation field and got a little more educated and read some more just how damaging fragmentation can be to habitat. And so, you know, we've talked about the obvious of like, you put a highway through the middle of ruffed lemur can't safely get across to the other side to mix their genetics. But we also have to talk about the fact that like those fruit trees that we need that high species richness, lots of different varieties of fruit trees. Well, some of those fruit trees might not like edge habitat where you have the edge of the forest right against the highway. They might need a certain amount of space within that habitat to spread out from each other. So if you fragment a habitat into a smaller section, you might lose an entire species of fruiting tree. Those kinds of domino effects are not as visible and obvious. And then, okay, there's one less species of fruiting tree there. Well, that fruiting tree happened to fruit at a critical time of year for the ruffed lemur when other things weren't available. And then we see the domino. The moms aren't able to get the right nutrients to either gestate the babies or create the nutrient-dense milk. And so it's not always obvious just how many little factors are going into things like forest fragmentation and how much effect it has on the forest.
The more that we learn about the impact of fragmentation, the more that we're starting to recognize that has probably been a big driver of extinctions in the geological past. That as you change climates dramatically, as mountains rise and change where rain is falling, that species that might have once been able to thrive in a forest, if like one species is lost, it creates natural fragmentation. And so that can create this like natural domino effect. So even without humans, the process of restructuring a forest can have this crazy effect on other species reliant on how the forest changes in these micro ways. And humans basically have just hit the gas on how these processes can happen. And that combined with the larger human effects on the climate is really, really messing with these habitats quickly.
And we'll definitely have conversations this season about more of what drives those conservation issues and the fact that it's not a very simple answer. And rainforest is a really valuable resource for any living life form, including humans. And so finding a balance really requires focusing on community and community-based conservation so that those resources can last for everyone.
Because ruffed lemurs are from the rainforest of Madagascar, and most of the species that we focus on at the Lemur Center are from other parts of the island, we wanted to give them some special attention, which means this is our longest season yet of iiPod. So in this season, we talked to a lot of folks, including Madison Armand, a primate technician here at the Lemur Center.
Andrea Baden, a professor at Hunter College in New York City who studies wild ruffed lemurs.
Raymond Vagel, graduate student at Texas State University who studies lemur cognition, enrichment, and welfare.
Camille DeSisto, a graduate student here at Duke University who studies how lemurs interact with the plants in their environment.
Nora Mamami Rahanta Harivau, a professor at the University of Antananarivo who studies the giant extinct relatives of ruffed lemurs.
Charlie Welch, conservation coordinator at the Lemur Center, who will discuss the historic reintroduction of some ruffed lemurs to the wild.
And Grayson Pellerito, a primate technician who splits her time between Lemur Center and a partner zoo in Madagascar.
Thank you for tuning in for this episode of iiPod.
This podcast is brought to you, ad-free, by the Duke Lemur Center.
If you'd like to learn more about the Duke Lemur Center's work in research, education, and conservation, or even schedule a visit to see the lemurs,
or the fossils,
in Durham, North Carolina, go to lemur.duke.edu.
All that we do here at the Lemur Center is only possible with donor support. If you'd like to support us, you can visit lemur.duke.edu/donate. And with that, thanks for Matt
and Megan
and all the primates at the Duke Lemur Center.